The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
The real reset is coming. Excellent column by my guest this hour. We're going to get into in a moment, but I was doing a little reading. It's September of 2020, arguing there is an urgent need for global stakeholders to cooperate in simultaneously managing the direct consequences of the COVID-19 crisis. The World Economic Forum announced that, quote, to improve the state of the world, the World Economic Forum was starting the Great Reset Initiative. It would take place in the context of the UN General Assembly, as the World Economic Forum's fourth and, for the first time, fully virtual Sustainable Development Impact Summit, planned to convene leaders from government, business, international organizations, et cetera, from all over the world. I really don't know how that all came out. My guest, I'm sure, will have observation as to whether that really reset anything. But the point is that there is a reset that Joe Biden says is happening even as we speak. It's called the Ukraine War, and that it will mark the start of what he calls a new world order. However, we're going to talk about it from the perspective of a scholar in these matters. Dr. Victor Davis Hanson is, as many of you know, just that. He's a scholar of the First Order. He is the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow in Classics and Military History at the Hoover Institution, Stanford University, author of a number of outstanding books through the years. His latest, The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalization Are Destroying the Idea of America. By the way, his website is his name, victorhanson.com. Victor, always look forward to talking with you. Thank you for giving us time today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give me a little more history than I just alluded to with this couple of years ago reset effort on the part of Klaus Schwab and the folks at the World Economic Forum? Did that materialize? And if so, did anything come out of that?
Well, for 35 to 40 years, the Davos World Economic Forum people under Klaus Schwab have been trying to supersede sovereignty because they don't believe that people are educated enough or sophisticated enough to do what's in their own interest. So they have this group of business leaders, Bill Gates, Michael Bloomberg, John Kerry, people from government, people from very wealthy people in private enterprise, and they feel that they know better, but they don't have the power. And so when COVID came along, he wrote a book, a co-author, The Great Reset in COVID-19, and the premise was this is a never, it's a crisis that never should go to waste. And during the panic and the lockdown, it gave enormous powers to those who were unelected, and those powers then should not cease after the pandemic waned, but they should be a model of what you can do during a pandemic. If government can lock people down, force them to wear masks, give conflicting versions of prophylaxis or remedies or therapies for the pandemic, then they could apply that same model to healthcare, to diversity, to global warming, and they could do it on an international scale. We've already seen that the EU and the United States have agreed to tax corporations at this at a set rate. Congress didn't have a say in. That was executive orders in most cases. We've also seen that the Paris Climate Accord, as the Iran deal is another example, was never sent to the Senate for treaty ratification. It would require two-thirds of the Senate. And so the effort, and Hillary Clinton, Gavin Newsom, like Rahm Emanuel, have said that COVID allowed people to either, in the case of Newsom, he said that we should have a more progressive capitalism. Hillary Clinton said this was our opportunity to achieve single-payer health care. So the common denominator is that these people don't feel in normal times their agenda appeals to even a minority of citizens. It's just unpopular. And only during these crises can they push this agenda through during times of hysteria and panic. And we've seen what happened with the Biden first 14 months. People don't want any of it. And they feel that it was pushed on them under the guise of COVID or January 6th or Donald Trump's going to destroy them. Whatever the hysteria was, they used it to push positions that only 30 or 35% of the people wanted.
And would this be also, Victor, why we are still seeing more than mere shades of COVID control still rearing its ugly head? The CDC just announced that now they're going to extend the mask requirements on airlines beyond April 13th to May 3rd. And also one of the, I guess, is Pfizer came out today with a seeking approval of a new drug to give to children, I think, 6 to 11. In other words, this COVID thing provided such a track of control into the American body politic. They don't want to let go of it, do they?
No, and they're anti-science, because we know that while they're trying to reboot the quarantine, lockdown, masking routine, they're letting in the fiscal year, they let in 2 million people in the southern border, and they're going to do it again without vaccinations or tests, and of course not with masks either. And we know that during June of 2020, when the streets were crammed with BLM and Antifa protesters, 1,000 healthcare, most of them working for governments, healthcare workers said that it was more injurious for the protesters to go back home and obey the rules that they had imposed on everybody else about quarantine than to be expressing their discontent at society at large. So they make up the rules as they go along. And we know that from Anthony Fauci's own emails. And the two statistics show that two of the safest places for an employee is A, in an airplane, where air is recycled every 3 minutes, and B, is to be a teacher when that age rubric of 5 to 18 is the least likely to both be infected and to transmit infections. And yet those are the two areas where we locked down and we were the most stringent.
On what premise does Joe Biden claim that the Ukraine mess will in fact involve a whole new reset of world order? What's he have in mind?
Well, I think he has in mind that when that invasion, the Russian invasion, started on February 24th, he was underwater on every issue, and 75% of the current inflation had already occurred, and he was already blaming inflation. Remember that saying it was transitory, it was due to COVID, or it was due to Donald Trump. And so he looks at this entire invasion as sort of a panacea, that this is the cause of all of his unpopularity on the one hand, but it's also an opportunity with an agenda. And he's going to say that we can really press the new Green Deal. I know you're unhappy about energy, but it's already high, and it wasn't my fault. And it's because we don't have enough alternative fuel. So he's manipulating this crisis and saying, I know things are bad and you're angry at me, but don't be angry at me, because had you listened to me, we would have made these fundamental transitions. We would have had a more equitable economy. So whether it was the border or whether it was critical race theory or shutting down fossil fuels, all the things that caused the current misery, he's sort of blaming on either COVID or now most recently Ukraine. That's kind of Orwellian to think, wow, I destroyed things that I inherited that were working, whether it was energy or the economy or the border or foreign policy. But now that I've destroyed them and I'm not going to change, I'm not going to self-correct and make the necessary adjustments so people will be, you know, supportive again, I'm going to blame it all on Ukraine. And that was a problem. So it's almost as if the problem wasn't that I was radical and destroyed institutions or changed things, but I wasn't radical enough. And the reason you're unhappy is because of Ukraine. But if it had not happened, I would have been able to fulfill my energy agenda, and we would be, you know, we'd all be having solar panels and Tesla. That's sort of, it's hard to follow because it's so crazy, and the polls show only about 35% of American people agree with it.
Well, on that note, of course, with that as the backdrop, there are, as you've cited in your column, some very real issues involved with what you call a real reset that's on its way, headed right toward us. You talk about new orders and resets always entailing far bigger government, more unelected, powerful bureaucracies. Common folks going to have to quit fossil fuels. Of course, not those who can fly around in their jets. Pelosi, Zuckerberg et al. Also, middle-class lifestyles, you say, are going to be curbed, and we're going to be instructed to strive for sustainability and, hey, be willing to downsize into maybe a smaller living quarter and so forth. Talk about those very real implications of a reset of the sort that that Klaus Schwab was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, when people are looking at the stuff of life and they're looking at their fuel, their food, their housing, daily materials, and you add that into rising crime and lack of security abroad, they see the stuff of life, it's not sustainable. And that's why they're very angry, and they're blaming Joe Biden. And in this, to lose certain constituencies, suburban moms, so to speak, Hispanics and blacks, because he's completely alienated the white working class. And he needs such extraordinary percentages of these groups, and he appeals to them in entirely chauvinistic terms. And yet, for all of his talk about politics and wokeness, they have the same concerns as anybody else. And so he's going to lose 50% of the Hispanic vote. He may lose 20% of the African American male vote. He may 55% of suburban women. He cannot win, and people on that agenda with him cannot win, and they know it. And, they started out saying, well, Congress is almost equal now, so we might it's not going to be a big loss because we weren't really that much ahead, or they weren't really that much down. But now they're talking 40 or 50 seats and losing the Senate. And that means, if you look back at what Barack Obama did in that 8-year supposedly term, he lost 1,100 state and local offices from the Democrats' loss. And I think it's going to be a complete disaster for the Democrats. And I think they know it. And yet they're so wedded to this ideology that they know it's almost like an addict. They know they have to quit, but they won't.
Let's talk for a moment or two while I still have this focus from you on the larger issue of what many have said for years is on its way. There were those times when especially those who came from the faith community and the religious perspective said there will come a day of one world leader and so forth. Others have kind of, viewed that with a certain amount of, tolerance. But that aside, there are those mindsets now among some of whom you've named already, Zuckerberg, Gates, others. Is it not true that many of these men do think in that regard, that we are fast approaching a time when we need to level all the borders, do away completely with nationalism as such, and form some kind of world order that is centralized even beyond anything the UN supposedly was supposed to do? Is that helicopter stuff, or do you see that?
That's why they have such a fondness for China. They love China not just because they've been enriched by joint ventures with the autocratic Chinese, but they look at the ability of China to force people to live in high rises or to take mass transit or to be regimented, or what we see now in Shanghai, which has been very receptive. People have been very receptive to it among our elite, shutting down, 9 million people for this new strain of COVID. So they like the idea that the Chinese are authoritarian, and they think they can be the same way. What they really don't like is free speech, liberty, the American people, especially the American people between the coast. They're globalists, they're cosmopolitans, who feel that there's certain people worldwide that have more commonalities with one another, their education, their ancestry, their taste, their culture, their wealth. And they should sort of unite to rule the world, and they should be sort of ashamed of most of the people in their respective countries. And you really see it with Brexit, the backlash with Brexit, the Trump phenomenon, what you see with Viktor Orban and Eastern Europeans. So there's a reset against the reset. And I think it's a grassroots anger at these elites, because people look at them and they think, there's no reason they're elite. They're not any more intelligent than anybody else. Take away the letters after their names or their bank accounts or their appurtenances. And they're just everyday average people. They have no title, no claim to superiority over anybody. And this Biden 14 months of disaster has been very deleterious to the globalist movement, because they finally got what they wanted. They had the courts, they have the Congress, they have the presidency, and they had the media, they had the corporations, Silicon Valley, the universities, and what did they do with it? They made Americans furious at them.
Would you say that Elon Musk is an aberration among those people? He's certainly the wealthiest man, or one of the wealthiest in the world now, and seems to have some views that resonate with a lot of freedom-loving Americans. Of course, we all know what's going on currently with the Twitter battle, but in the larger context, where do you see him as compared to some of these other names we've mentioned?
Well, I think they hate him because he's idiosyncratic. And he's more talented than most of them. I mean, none of them could go into space or electric vehicles or media. He's all over the place. He has talents that range beyond just social media or Silicon Valley. And that's what they have. So they can't stand him. And they know that he's much more popular than he's more wealthier than they are as well. So I think, but more importantly, I think Elon Musk sees that in November there's going to be a reset, and there's going to be a popular anger, and one of the manifestations of that anger in its initial stages when the Republicans control both houses of Congress is going to be a hard look at the monopolies in Silicon Valley. And so I think he's telling Twitter, you better have me in charge, because I'm not like you. And if you're in charge, they're going to go after you, and they're going to break up Twitter, they're going to break up Facebook, they're going to open it up, and it'd be better if I did it rather than you. So I think that's some of the subtext. And then he's also saying, you know, there's Truth Social from the Nunes Trump project. Parler is being resurrected. So between government intervention and rival companies, Silicon Valley better listen to somebody that's a maverick, because you've got a lot of obstacles coming down the pipe. And I think they're going to listen to him, because I don't think it's sustainable to, you know, suppress Hunter laptop to affect an election, that story, or to ban Donald Trump, a former United States, and let the Taliban or Iranian terrorist or Chinese autocrats to be on Twitter. It doesn't make any sense. And people know that it's not sustainable.
Well, with this closing sentence, we'll wrap it up. But you say at the end of your article, the prophets of the New World Order sowed to the wind, and they will soon reap the whirlwind of an angry public worn out by elite incompetence, arrogance, and ignorance. And you've described it well, and I think a lot of Americans are right there with you. I think this is going to be a watershed moment beyond any we've seen recently at the November elections.
Absolutely. I think it's going to make 2010 or 1994 look pale in comparison.
Great to talk with you as always, my friend. We'll keep doing it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.